This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay. Can everybody say? Thank you all for coming. As today we have already said, the small Chunaranin are getting ready for Shabbos. Remember a couple of weeks ago I met someone and he told me we know each other. I said, from where? He says, you know, from Torah Anytime. I see you and you see me. I know how to explain this to him, but I don't really see him. We don't have that much of a sophisticated system. I see Rafal, I see Mordechai, I see Moshe, I see everybody. I don't know, really. A lot of times people say to me, I know you, you don't know me. And I wonder sometimes if I know myself. I think that's really what's important. There are people that only see themselves and don't see others. And really what we want to do, what we want to work on, is seeing others and not seeing ourselves. Walk in yeshiva after today, you know, it was a hard... You have a hard time peeling your sweater off today? Like 2 weeks of wearing it. Not for my... No, not Maishi. I know, like the right. Like Bachrim that can't wear coats. You can only wear a scarf that flies in the wind like a kite behind you. Right? We've gone through this already. So I notice in the yeshivas, in the chedarim, every cheder, you'll see a bunch of loose gloves. Even though every mother takes the glove and they clip it on with that little clip, you know, the little thing. Yeah, I still do that. But go to any, you're going to see a bunch of scarves, a bunch of gloves laying all over the place, and go figure out which glove belongs to which. Which one connects to the other one, right? So there's a story that somebody once brought to Chavetz Chaim a pair of gloves. And it was on a train, and as the person was giving it, it was on a train, Chavetz Chaim didn't want to take it. And he didn't want to take gifts. Whatever the situation was, the man Mamish put it down on a tray, and Chavetz Chaim agreed to take it for whatever reason. Then as the window was open on this train, it took a bad curve and went to the window. So the Chavetz Chaim took the other glove and threw it out. So they asked him why he did that. He said, because if somebody finds one glove, what's he going to do with it? At least this way, let him have both gloves. I was thinking to myself, wow, who thinks that way, right? I lost the glove, so I never. The guy that's going to find it has nothing out of it. Let him have two gloves. You know what I mean? I think that that comes from a certain internal process where your mind is set on transmit. Your mind is set on, okay, my role in life is to give. My role in life is to be a mashpil. You think differently, the way your mind works, the way your heart works, and the way your gloves work. The way everything works, right? When a besmedish here in Ar Yitzchak that thinks to give. I think that just to see what goes on here in a night seder is just amazing. And the doors open wide for everyone, and the kol Torah that rings, and so many people that are here to give, here to be mashpia. So, I told you last week I was in Miami. Somebody came and told me that he asked me if I stopped to visit the orange juice factory. I said, no, really, I didn't have time for orange juice factories. So this person said, you would have really found it interesting. I said, tell me what happens in an orange juice factory. They don't make the oranges, right? Oranges grow on trees. Not only do oranges grow on trees, they even grow with seeds, right, to make another orange, which is the 10th of the Asarim Amoris, the Torah says. So he told me this is the way it works. Can't vouch for the authenticity. He said, trucks and trucks come in with oranges, okay? And the oranges spill, I mean, they go down a shaft into, he says, something that looks like an Olympic-sized pool. And it's filled up with these oranges. I said, oh no, what happens? Don't tell me people take off their shoes and socks and dance on it afterwards. Right? That's just wine, right? So he said, so why exactly do they do this? So he tells me, he said, listen to what happens afterwards. He says, afterwards they open up these, I guess, faucets of water, and the water just rises, and it covers the oranges. And the oranges are in this water the entire night. Then another shaft opens up. It's of pounds of sugar. And the oranges sit in this sugar water the entire night. Closed, completely closed. Their peel is on it. And he says in the morning, this is what he told me, the oranges are as big as grapefruits. because they absorb the water. And from there, they go into the, you know, whatever, pressers that squeeze the orange juice out of it. Did you ever wonder, you remember in the old days, when we had orange juice, you had to shake it. People don't shake orange juice. You still shake orange juice? Does it even say shake well before using them? It does? You still shake your orange juice? Everyone shakes their orange juice? I stopped doing it once when I gave it. My mother used to say, shake it. I gave it this good shake, and I forgot that the cover was off. Right, I stopped doing it afterwards, yes. Yes, you know, it's like your cleaning lady has to clean the oranges off the ceiling, yeah. Also, that guest that came to me for breakfast never came back. I don't know why. But you ever wonder why orange juice is always sweet? Now, when you take oranges, or you buy oranges in the store, or you eat oranges, some of them are sweet, some are not sweet.
Some are sour.
Right. How come oranges is always sweet? How do they know? They don't open the orange and bite into the orange to see if it's sweet or not. So what happens is all oranges are made sweet through this process. I said to him, wait a second. But how then could they write on the orange juice container, whoever the they is, no sugar added, 100% pure oranges? So this person told me, and again, I take no crisis, but this person told me that according to USDA regulations, as long as the peel is whole, as long as the peel is whole, then it doesn't make a difference that it was sitting in sugar water the entire night, you can still call it no sugar added. If the peel is open or cracked, then you have to write sugar added. So I said, but I don't understand. You just told me that the oranges become big. You just told me that the oranges become as big as grapefruits. So if the oranges become, so you know that the water, as long as it's whole. So I said this to a class today of kids that I was talking to. And I said, okay, what would you do with this? What do you think we can learn from this? So one kid said, before next time he's going to dive into a pool, he will definitely look before to see what he's diving into. Another kid said, don't believe what you read. Another kid said, they always told his mother, he thinks that Diet Coke is a lot more healthier than orange juice. Can anyone tell me, what would you learn, assuming that this is true, what would you learn from this story? What do you think, like, the limud, so to speak, is from this story? Moshi.
Not
everything looks like the way it is. Okay. Have any suggestions? What do you think the limud of the story is? Anyone want to suggest something? Hilly! Sorry, I didn't mean to. Okay. What would you suggest the limud of this story is? Moshi's learning for me to plug in the camera. Everything is not what it seems. Anyone else? Anyone else have? Rafal, what do you say?
A good environment has its...
I'm thinking the same way Rafal is thinking. Great men think alike. Mordechai, you wanted to say something? I'll soon get back to what Rafal was saying. What do you think we learned from this orange story?
Everything goes into the mikvah.
Everything goes into the mikvah. Ah, very good. That's good.
Push everything to the limit.
Yeah. But I was thinking along what Rafal was saying. I was saying, Lamaisa, if you're in an environment of sweet, you become sweet, even if you have a hard shell. So in other words, like, these oranges are closed. They're closed. But you're laying in sweet water, you become sweet. And I think that this just has to emphasize the importance of just being in the right environment. And again, I could point out just the yeshiva, just to hit me today, the night side over here, just unbelievable, the whole day, what the Torah that comes out of this Beis Medrash, both the Ar Yitzchak and Birkas Shmuel. But how many people walk out of here different? But I think that there's another thing we learn from here. If you look at this orange, you're going to say, what's the point? The orange is closed. There's a peel around the orange. What is the point of the orange laying in a bathtub of sugar water? Nothing is getting through anyway. Look at that orange. It doesn't smile at you. It's closed. It says, so why did Hashem say that they should talk to Klal Yisrael? Didn't Hashem know they're not going to listen to Moshe? And the answer is, says Sfasemis, you think that the person is not listening. But in reality, you don't know what's penetrating. And I think that we try to learn, we try to daven, we try to have chavrusas, we try to come to a night set, we try to come to chakras. It's not talking to me. I feel like there's just this cold shell around me. There may be a cold shell around you, but don't think that nothing is penetrating. It looks like l'shamu o'moshe mikaitzeruch. And I think that, getting back to what we were saying, from the transmitting perspective as well, why should I try to learn with this kid on my block? He's not listening anyway. Why should I try to sing zmiras by my Shabbos table? It doesn't work. I'm not saying you shouldn't pick the right zmirais, or, you know, I try to speak in Yonim of Torah by my Shabbos Suda. And kids walk away. How long is your drasha? An hour, hour and a half. I'm not saying you shouldn't adapt. But don't give up. Don't give up, because the ma'aseh, you talk with a smile, you're mashpia simcha, the simcha penetrates. It does. So the story is that the Rebbe Rabbunim is walking, and somebody's drowning. And they're trying to save him. They're trying to save him. Sorry? No, Shem Rabbunim was from Aaron Rot. The Rebbe Rabbunim is from the Polish Rebbe. This goes back about 200 years ago. And someone is drowning, and they're trying to, you know, throw him the tube. It's not working, and he's going under, and they can't get to him. So the Rebbe Rabbunim yells from the gate. He says, look, I see you going down under anyway. He says, Shika Grisin Leviyusin. Send regards to the Leviyusin fish. And the guy starts laughing, and then somehow he's energized just with a little bit more kayak, and they get him out of there. So the Rebbe Rabbinim said that he saw it's all over. He saw there was nothing else to do. There was only one last desperate move. He was mashpia simcha. And with this, that he was mashpia simcha. So that was ma'ayra nuschosim. Now here's my question. Chas v'sham, no one should ever be in this situation. But it's like, I remember in camp, you know, this guy gets up and he starts running barefoot and rams into the corner of the bed. You know what I mean? You know that feeling when you can make Kiddush Levana? You know? Another night, your toe hits the corner of the bed barefoot and you're running. And this guy's screaming in pain. You know, and this guy says, well, I heard this good joke. And he proceeds to pick up, you know, the alarm clock and throw it at him. I understand, you know, it was mashpia simcha to him. I mean, l'chayr, most people that are drowning are not interested in jokes. This guy's drowning, and you think he really was laughing at this joke? It's just in regards to the Leviyos.
The Rebbe tells you a joke.
Ah, tells who tells you the joke, right? So it must be that the Rebbe Rabbunim was mashpia, such simcha, it's the kayach of the one that's transmitting. If the person that's transmitting is mashpia, that level of simcha, that level of kedusha, then it's a whole different ballgame. It's different. If it's a life of throwing out the other glove instead of crying, why I lost one. It's how I define myself. And because the Rebbe Rabbunim lived his life this way, and he did. He would always go into strangest places to be makar of people. He got a lot of heat for it. So Memele, he had a koyach of being mashpia simcha. His sugar was so sweet that it penetrated the thickest of hides, even a person drowning. So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says like this. Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma said, Hayisi mehavik, trouble someone for a siddur. I would get up, but I would probably knock over this whole wire with all the sodas and everything. Shkayach mashi. So it says in Pirkei Avos, you're supposed to... I know it's not time for Pirkei Avos yet. That's after Pesach. But you can learn Pirkei Avos whenever you want. And also maybe it's a school to make it till after Pesach. Give me like 10 minutes, I'll find it. I always say I hate middle speeches when people look for things. Israeli said it's easy to find Pirkei Avos?
It's easy. It's
why?
Back.
It's in the back. Oh. Then you have to find the Mishnah. Okay, so here it goes. Amar Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma. Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma said, Pam achas, it once happened. Hayisi mahalach b'derech. Now mahalach b'derech means that he was being challenged. Using the term derech, when it's used in this context, like, right, Amalek is ashakarcha b'derech. He was obviously in an unsettling situation. He was mahalach, he had to move on. Mahalach means that he was in a mode of being mashpia to others. A mem at the beginning of the word, but it's not part of the shayrish, means to project. Upaga bi adam echad. What does that mean, upaga bi adam echad? He doesn't say he just met someone, but rather upaga bi adam. You know what upaga bi adam echad is? I remember I was once standing in Bar Ilan, I was trying to flag down a taxi, I couldn't. This Yerushalayim becomes a chizkei devayzim via zoi, he says. He stands in the middle of the road, you know, they start screaming in, you know, rapid fire Hebrew, and here's the cap. You know, there's paga bi. There's a way of stopping someone, and there's a way of, you know, this guy comes into the bank, and the teller says, I'm sorry, we're closed. You tell me what to do. I'm sorry, we're closed. He says, you better serve me right now. And the manager comes out again and says, you get out of here, I'll pick you up and carry you out. The guy turns around and starts leaving. So the teller says, I spoke to you nicely. Why couldn't you listen to me? He says, you spoke to me? You babbled. He spoke to me. So, paga bi adam echad. You know this guy, what does the word pega mean in Hebrew? Embarrass someone. There we go. So paga bi adam echad. This guy is obviously, we use the word paga, right? We are davening in the morning. Hashem should save us from pegara, right? So paga bi adam echad. Hashem should, like the closing of the Rebbe used to say, Hashem should save us from having to deal with the pegara, and also from being the pegara. So yisi mahalach b'derech upaga bi adam echad, and this person encountered me. Like, really, like, you know, a guy gets in your way. I don't mean to... You have a minute? You know when a guy grabs you and throws you up in the corner, like, blocks you in and says, you have a minute? You have a choice, right? The nasali shalom. He gave me shalom. The hechazarti loy shalom, and I returned shalom to him. Now, really, it says you're supposed to try to give someone shalom before he gives shalom to you. You should be the first to give shalom, right? Rabbi Yochanan said, li oylam like kidmani adam, no one ever beat him to it. To give him shalom before he gave somebody else shalom. And the Gemara says, afil nochri shabashuk. No one. Who always gave shalom first? But apparently over here, the guy just accosted him. Like, it wasn't like he saw someone coming and said, oh, someone's coming. A man is coming. Shalom aleichem. He just like, oh, so, boom, what? Hey, yo, shalom aleichem. Like, he didn't even know what hit him.
Probably but, two things. You can have it two in different ways.
Right.
Also embarrassed and also to meet somebody.
But it means like a sudden encounter, right?
No, it's two ways.
What's a pagu? But a pagu, isn't a pagu a terrorist attack?
Pagu is a bomb.
Pagu is a bomb.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Not saying.
Different word?
If go up a ben adam is two different things. If go is embarrass somebody, also you point, you saw somebody in the street.
Oh, so it was a chance encounter, so to speak. Okay. I can't hear you, Moshe. It's long distance. Vayivgabamakim, right, correct. But it also was an unexpected. But Vayivgabamakim also means an unexpected encounter that the Harmaria came before. So, Vechzarti lo shalom, despite the surprise, he gave him back shalom. Amali said to me, Rabbi, mi ezim mokimata, where are you from? Where are you from? Amarti lo say, told him, mi ir gedoyle shal chachamim, shal seifrim, and I'm from a big city of chachamim and seifrim. Amali said to me, ooh, Rabbi, I got an idea. Want to live with us? Hey, what do you say about that? Want to live with us? Come on over. We could use a rabbi. It would be so nice. And, hey, to sweeten the pie, you know what I'm going to give you? I'll give you elef alofim dinerei zav, right? Vavonim toivus or magolius. Dinerei zav, right? In the Gemara, I see some mashi. Or you have any more? So I'll just wait for the last one. Okay. Dinner is Zahav. Dinner is right in the Gemara law. I think in Iran, Iraq today, is it still a dinner, right? Dinner is the currency. Dinner is Zahav. Avonim Toivais Umar Goliath. I'll give you all the gold, the diamonds, the pearls. Amarati loy. So I said to him, listen here, my friend. Imata noisenly. I think there's another Lashon Bini, my son. Even though it doesn't say that over here. Imata noisenly kol kesev azov avonim toivus and margolius shavi oilam. You give me all the silver, all the gold, and all the diamonds and pearls in the world. Ain't a dar elab makam tar. I'm only going to live in a makam tar. So really, what was his problem here? Why didn't he go there and turn it into a makam tar? And the answer is something here didn't stick. They weren't looking for a rav. They were looking for a rav. They would have gone to find one, right? I always meet someone. I say, you know, oh, I always wanted to tell you. No, you didn't, because then you could have told me. You always wanted to tell me. No, it's not, right? And also, the way he said it was like, he didn't say, you know, we could use a rav. He said, hey, would you like to come live by us? Like, you know, as if, well, if you want to come live by us, we'll accommodate you. You know, it wasn't like, I need you. He got the attitude. And the other problem is whenever you negotiate a contract and you say to someone, and how much are you going to pay? And the guy says, I'll give you all the money in the world. You know what that means? It means nothing.
Far away.
Right. Yeah, stay far away. No, don't give me all the money in the world. Just give me my check, okay? It's like when you say to someone, can we talk? Yeah. When? Whenever you want. You know what that means?
Never.
No. Now tell me when. Tell me tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. You know, don't tell me never. That's always a bad thing, right? We say, how much are you willing to pay? He used to say, the Panovich Rav, he went around Rabbi Warren. Rabbi Warren used to say, Zayin Gesund, he says, they would meet someone, the guy would say, I'll try. So the Panovich Rav said, I don't speak English, but I know what I'll try means. It means nothing. And sometimes the guy says, I'll try my best. He says, that means garnish with garnish. That means nothing with nothing. So the guy's giving him all the money in the world. That means, don't give me all the money in the world. You know what I mean? We'd offer him a salary and free fish for Yom Tov, maybe. Always say, you know, how much, you know, listen, I can give you 500 up to 700. The guy gives you a range. You know where you're up to. He's giving everything away, then you're left with nothing. So whatever the case was, you know, the story, the Rav is there for a town and he sits up front and he's our Rav. After a few weeks, he says, I'm leaving. And people come over to him. They say, why are you leaving? He says, first of all, that's the first shayla I got. All these weeks that I'm here. No one seems to have any questions, right? Where I am. And then he goes on, and he explains to the person, it seems that you're really fakacht in money. Really, money means a lot to you. So let me tell you something, my friend, he says. You should know that b'shas p'tirosai shel adam, ein melavin loy la'adam, nothing comes with you. Nothing comes with you, loy kesev, loy zav, loy avanim tovus u'magalias. Guess what? You know, to get right, Rothschild left in a Savoy, wanted to be buried in his socks. So his whole thing with the Chevra Kaddish, they said, you can't be buried in your socks. At the end, they didn't. And then they opened up another Tzava, and it said over there, I hope they didn't bury me in my socks. I just wanted to prove to you. I know. I just wanted to prove to you that, you see, even my socks I couldn't take with me. So everything down here is a rental, my friends. You gotta give it back. He says, Ela Torah, And then it goes on to describe over here that the Torah protects you on three levels. And one is the body and the kaver, and the other is the neshama when it comes up to Olam Haba, and the third phase is by Tchiyas HaMeis. I'm trying to explain this a little bit. You ever get these calls? We'd like to offer you, update your credit card, eligible for more credit, and if you answer our three questions, you will win a Caribbean cruise, right? How much you got that, right? Caribbean cruise to Venezuela, where you'll stand in line for toilet paper or something. You know? Well, I don't think you'll get that far. Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma obviously was at a challenging moment. And he said to him, you have it all wrong. You're saying, hey, come over. We got all the money in the world. We're not challenged. You are. You're missing the point of this world. The point of this world is to, I don't know if we're on the level of the Chavetz Chaim, to throw the other glove. But the point of this world, our tafkid, is to create that sugar water that should penetrate anything. Now, the Eira, what does Rashi say? The Eira, what does Rashi say? Who could tell me what Rashi says in the word Ve'era? I know it's very deep into the parasha, so not everyone got there yet. But first Rashi in the Sedra. Rashi says, Ve'era, I don't want to mention names over here because that would be embarrassing. Ve'era el ha'avais. Why does Rashi say Ella Aves for? What does the word Aves mean? So there's a vart from the Brzhana Rav. I heard Rabbi Reisman talk about this. It's a beautiful vart. He says like this. The Gemara says, bear with me, we've mentioned this Gemara many times in Masechtas Bava Metzia. Eliyahu Hanavi was a Talmud of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Rabbeinu HaKadosh had Eliyahu Hanavi come to a shir. Imagine if Eliyahu Hanavi comes to a shir. Right? Imagine Rabbeinu HaKadosh was saying, so Eliyahu, what do you say? Imagine, we're sitting with a shir. Would have the Torah anytime camera picked up Eliyahu HaNavi? I don't know. Would have picked up Rabbeinu HaKadosh? And one day, Eliyahu comes late. And Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi says to him, why were you late? Can you imagine that? Like, excuse me, Eliyahu, you have a note? Why are you late? Right? You know my story, 8th grade. They always bring their notes, why they're late. I saved two of them, right? Which two? One, this kid says, I woke up and I came to yeshiva. So how was I supposed to know to wake up if in my dream I was in yeshiva? And the other note was, it said, please excuse Shloimeh, his grandmother had a baby and he had to stay home to watch his aunts and uncles. And it was true. Okay? So Eliyahu HaNavi says, and we'll get back to that in a minute. He says, you know why I'm late? I'm so sorry that I'm late. Let me tell you why I'm late. I had to wake up Avraham Avinu and wash his hands, and he had to daven. And I had to wake up Yitzchak Avinu and wash his hands, and he had to daven. I had to wake up Yaakov Avinu and wash his hands, and he had to daven. And then, yeah. So Rabbeinu Kosher says, why couldn't you wake up all of them at the same time? Why can't they all daven at the same time? What does it mean to wake them up? It means that they're in a certain olam to make them aware of what's going down in this world. So Eliyahu says, if they all three of us, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, were daven at the same time, Shiach would come. So he says, is there anyone on here, is there a team of three down here in this world that could generate that level of rachmin? So he tells him, yes, Reb Chiya and his two sons. Reb Chiya and his two sons, Okie dokie, miyad gozer Rebbe Tanisa. Rebbe says, we're going to finish up this galus right here and right now. And Rebbe is Geyser Tainis, and Reb Chiya and Vanav are standing there, and they say Masha Veruach, and the winds start blowing. And they say Moirid HaGeshem, and it starts to thunder. It is pouring. And they're about to say Mechayim Mesem, the world starts shuddering. And the Maral says the world starts shuddering. That meant actually that the world was starting. It meant actually that the Tchiyas HaMesem process began to start. And they said, whoa, who gave over the secret? Eliyahu. So they hit Eliyahu, I think, with 60 fiery lashes. I don't remember the Gemara. I'm not sure what that means, to get hit with 60 fiery lashes, but it doesn't sound good. And they said, you better stop this now. So he came down, and he appeared like a burning bear. And everyone got nervous, and they all ran away. Now, I know if a burning bear would walk into this shir, nobody would stop. Because if you're sleeping, you can't see him. No, not because that, because... But I guess they, when that burning bear walked in, they got distracted. Then Yehuda says, when a bear attacks someone, he digs down deep to the heart. There was something missing, and they weren't ready for it. So it was stopped, okay? Now, what is the inyan of all the Avos daven together? All the Avos daven together is, all the Avos went through unbelievable nesiyonos. But Avram's primary midah is the midah of chesed, and he had to go through the nesiyonos of chesed, and then face gvura, and Yitzchak is gvura, and he had to go through chesed, and Yaakov is teferis. Had all the Avos faced all of their nesiyonos together at one shot, that would be unbelievable nesiyonos. But that would have brought Mashiach. But that was too much. It would have been overwhelming. And that's what Rashi says, Ve'era el ha'avos. The Avos went through unbelievable nesiyonos. But he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, you want the Geula right now? Then we would need the nesiyonos of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov simultaneously. That's what Rashi means. And we can't. Klal Yisrael can't do it. They're not ready. The contradiction would be overwhelming. They would not be able to do it. We got to do it piece by piece. Accept it step by step. And that means that if you have a day, like I had today, in the Yiddish there's an expression, mit the pitim arup, you know what I mean? Pitim is on the wrong side of the yesterig, you know, nothing goes right. Okay, this is the day. You try to do one thing, a person has tainas on you, hey, you go weiter, try again. Chaim Shmulevitz, Zechut Tzadik Levrach, Melch Biedemann says a story. He's sitting by a shir. There's a guy that came in on Muhammad Yid. He was a big Talmud Chacham before the war, and now he cracked. He would come into the shir, and he was like, get him out of here. Not Reb Chaim. Not Reb Chaim. Heilig Reb Chaim Shmulevitz stands there. And he says, make him comfortable. And you think the guy was quiet by shir? He asked very important questions. Reb Chaim was giving the most complicated shir, and this guy picks up his hand. Rebbe! Yeah. How come the nose sticks out and your ears stick out and your eyes are inside and your mouth is inside? How come Hashem couldn't make your nose inside and your ears inside? Huh? I guess all angry. Somebody answer me! Reb Chaim said, where would you put your eyeglasses on if you didn't have ears and a nose? The guy said, oh, Rebbe, good teretz. You're looking at Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, it's like, hey, come on, like, give us a break here, right? He says, that's what this person needs. If that's what the person needs, then that's what you give it him. Reb Chaim once went to, we'll have to learn from this, went to a bar mitzvah of one of the people came to a shir. He said to Reb Chaim, so many people listening to a shir. He goes, I don't have so many people listening. He's at a karsa type, that's why he went to him. It's coming to him all these years. But you have so many people listening to the shir. He says, I don't. I have one person and one person and one person. Every person's own chashivas. Somebody once said Hitler, Yimach Shemoy, didn't kill 6 million Jews. It becomes very cold. He killed one Jew, six million, right, people 6 million times. It's, you know, a father, a mother, a sister, whoever. It's, numbers get very, Chaim says, I look at every single person as someone separate. And really, but it's more than that. It's the reason that people came to Reb Chaim Shiurim, because you can feel someone cares about you. You can go through our whole life and have kindness on someone. You know, he's so angry. Why didn't he tell me good Shabbos? We just go over to him and ask, tell him good Shabbos. He'll answer you back. Take the initiative. I have this guy, I went to visit him, and he shows me, he signed up for all the real estate brokers, put them on the list. He doesn't have a red cent to his name. But they think he's interested in buying a building, so they keep sending him there. You know, it's the listings. Oh, the guy calls him up. I'm telling you, I got a great place. They want 6 million for it, 30 units, waterfront, 900 square feet. And he goes, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll come down and look at it. I said, what are you doing? You don't have money for a banana. It makes me feel good. It makes me dream. So that doesn't help. You know, it doesn't help. I'm telling you, he goes, three blocks on the Brooklyn Bridge. Yeah, he has a better property. He has the actual Brooklyn Bridge that he's selling. He says, I was last Friday night, it was pretty cold, right? So somebody told me, a chashev rav. He said, he gives a little shiur Friday night, and afterwards there's the Oynik Shabbos. And he said, he's outside of New York. It was freezing. He said he couldn't believe it. People came. And he asked somebody, why did you come? It's like hitting me to say it. He wanted him to come. He says, you live far away. It's minus who knows how much. He said, you don't know what it means to me. I work all week in a place. There's no humanity there. It's just I'm a machine. Come, I'll walk through anything for it. Paroi told the Yidden, "Al Yishu b'Divrei Shakar." He says, so the Medrash says, Mashgiach Lazangis, and it always mentions this, that Moshe Rabbeinu had told Paroi, give them one night off, they'll work better. Give them a day off. And he picked Shabbos. They didn't have the Torah, but they had Megillus. And Friday night, they would get together, and they would talk about the Geula. And Paroi said, don't talk about it. It bothered him very much. It bothered him very, very much. You know, talk about Geula. We often said it, what the Nesiva Shalom says. You get together Friday night, down here in this world, up there, they let you get together Friday night. Not everyone comes from the same place, you know, up there. He says, but if you're really good friends, they keep you here. It says, Kaved Leif Pari, the Degel Mach Nefrayim brings, that Pari's heart, taka turned into Kaved, piece of liver. That's why that was the Makas Dam. He says, most of our Averis, we create ourselves. We lock ourselves out. The Degel Mach Nefrayim says a Pelet Gazach. He says, anyone that gives over a psura toiva to someone else, it's Neslavish Boy Eliyahu HaNavi. Slavish Boy Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi has to comment to him. Tell someone is released from prison. The guy comes in and says, pack your bags! No! He doesn't know if he's being put into solitary confinement. He doesn't know if he's being sent. He doesn't know what's going on. They tell him, you can go. I says, why did the guy have to skid a living daylights at him? You know why? Because he wasn't Zoycha that Eliyahu HaNavi should come into. And they bring this. You have to try to find excuses to give someone good news, to be mechazik someone. Because what happens is, a nitzutz of Eliyahu HaNavi goes into you. What does that mean? A spark of Eliyahu HaNavi goes into you. Says the Maral, people have Gili Eliyahu in many different ways. Right? Some people have Gili Eliyahu in dreams. Some people may be having Gili Eliyahu right now here. That's fine. Some people have Eliyahu HaNavi, they knock on the door. Hi, Eliyahu is here. How are you, Eliyahu? Rabbeinu HaKadosh, he comes as a Talmud. So the Maral says it's a different kind of Eliyahu HaNavi. What's the different kind of Eliyahu HaNavi? Is you go to sleep, you're all worried about something. You're tossing and turning, you're angry, you're upset, you're frustrated. Suddenly, there's like this breath of fresh air comes through the windows, and you go, hey, you know what? I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm feeling okay. What happened? He says, you don't know. There's a pchina, says the Maral, that Eliyahu HaNavi came to your neshama. He says, when you try to give someone a psura toiva, good news, it's neslabish in you, a nitzutz of Eliyahu HaNavi. There's two mishnas toward the end of Perikei and Pirkei Avos. One is from Ben Hehe and one is from Ben Bagbag. You got to wonder what their parents were thinking when they gave them these names, no? Ben Bagbag and Ben Hehe. Ben Bagbag says, Hafeichba, Hafeichba, keep turning over the Torah, the Kulaba, and Ben Hehe says, Lefun Tzara Agra. According to the Tzara, that's your reward. Does anyone know where the names Ben Bagbag or Ben Hehe come from? Anyone? They were Gerim. And in those days, if you were a ger, that could cost you your life. So they wanted to hide their names. So what was represented a ger was the letter hey, right? Avram became Avraham, and Sarai became Sarah. So Ben Bagbag is Beis Gimel as hey. And Ben Hey is Takahei. So here they are, they're living in fear. If anyone finds out who they are, they're going to be killed. And they're saying, Lefum Sarah Agra. They're saying, we take the world for what it is. Hashem created this world with a hay. Why? The bottom of the hay is open. You fall right out. So you work your way back in through the opening of the hay. It's not so easy to get in. But when you're there, says the Sefer Tayim Devari, you're coming back, you hit bottom emotionally, you hit bottom in every avery you could think, you're trying to come back. Hashem says, come, climb. You get into the little part of the hay. Hashem says, I'm going to hold you here. To make sure you don't fall out. And Ben Bagbag says, Hafoichba v'hafoichba. Hafoichba says, the Maranayim means you can turn Midas Hadin to Midas Harachman. It doesn't make a difference what you did. Elginas egois iradati, says the Pasuk of Shir Shirim. What's Taisha? Elginas egois? Field of nuts. The Klipa, that's Mitzrayim, where the Das was in Golis. Svasema says that the 10 Makos correspond to the 10 Nisyonos. That Avram passed, and that Yidden failed, and the Aseres Adibris. Every person in his life has 10 Nisyonos. Part of us are Avos, we passed them. Part of us are the Yidden in the Midbar, that to some level, relatively speaking, we failed. And we put this all together with the Makos that go on in our life, and there's a Hizgalus of Ashuas Ashchina that comes through it. Vayar Lekim es Bnei Yisrael Vayeda. Vayar Lekim, the Midas Adin, and they saw the Yidden were so lost in Mitzrayim. So like, we can't believe this is happening to us. But Hashem, we're holding on to you, and Vayeda. It says that, you know, by Makas Borod, so it says, Achita and Hakusem es loy niku, right? Why not? What does Rashi say? Because they were very soft. They're very soft, so if you don't put up a resistance, you just flap down. If you put up a resistance, you crack off. Kiafila seina. But it's interesting. Rav Moshe says, you know, the Makas were by design. Doesn't make a difference to the Mitzrayim. And the Makkah was the exact amount of Makkah that corresponded to Refuah. If it wasn't Basheret for the Chit and the Kasemis, the wheat, what's Tesh Kasemis spelled? If it wasn't Basheret for the Chit and the Kasemis to get destroyed, it wasn't going to get destroyed. Everything is with a Cheshbon. You call up a car service in the snow, right? They want twice the amount of money. More. Groceries charge more for delivery, right? In the snow. It's taka harder to get there. Now, do you realize when it's harder for you to do a mitzvah, Hashem pays you more? Do you realize in our life when you're down that Hashem pays you double the amount? So Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of Parsha Shema, he says what? He says, how can you do this? Hashem says, don't worry, it'll be good. At the beginning of Parsha Ve'era, Hashem speaks tough to Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, Ve'era l'avos, he obviously didn't react this way. Why didn't Hashem say that to start with? The answer is when someone is in pain, you don't give him mussar. That's what Chassam Sofer says. First Hashem says, Moshe, calm down. It's going to be okay. Now, next parsha, let me talk to you about what you spoke to me yesterday. Right? You don't do it. The guy, a lady telling me that she's husband comes in and she's like, everything is falling apart on her. The kids are running around without diapers. The things are crashing in. She's trying to stop an overflowing washing machine. She's standing, trying to you know, get the dishes from falling down. And the husband walks in and goes, you're going to have to learn to cope. This can't go on. Chacham. First, roll up your sleeves and help before you start giving mussar. If someone's down, don't give them mussar. At the end of Parsha Shmoyis, Hashem first says to Moshe Rabbeinu, it's going to be good. The pain of Klal Yisrael. Now, when we are ma'oira the koyach of simcha within ourselves, we're ma'oira the koyach of simcha to others. A terrible tragedy in Eretz Yisrael, right? Another terrorist attack. It's almost beyond imagination. A father of six children. So they came to... So I was thinking, what can we do? We got to think of life. We got to think of things of being Ma'ayra Simcha, that's Ma'ayra the Kaycha V'Leyaya Navi. They came to Rav Steinman, Zechut Tzadik L'Vrach, and they asked him, what's a school that have children? So he told him, check the mezuzahs, make sure you didn't hurt anyone's thing, and he says that the husband and wife should say the whole Tillim every day. I'm not sure exactly for how long. So somebody said to him, even a young man in Kail, I mean, Bittel Taira, he said, yeah, because the good thing about Tillim is that it's Lashma. You're not getting any covered from it. So they said to him, what about for a friend, what could you do as a schus to help a friend? So he said, bench and a siddur. Right? We always think big things, little things. He says, a skula for children is to pay schar limit for someone else. Somebody asked him, should he come live in Eretz Yisrael? He told him, no, you stay in America, you do achnasas arkin for yidden in Eretz Yisrael, you're in Eretz Yisrael. You know, so they once asked him about the skula of Chai Ratel, the 18 Ratel, they say, by Reb Shimon on Lag BaOmer. He says, he doesn't know these things. He says, he knows one thing, if you're not thirsty and you give them to drink, it's a big skula. That's the name. He says, all these skulas, do it l'shem mitzvah. Let Hashem do what he wants with it. Let Hashem do what he wants with it. So I want to read something to you. There's a book that came out from Mrs. Rotman, was the last person to pass away in the Har Nof massacre. But he lived for an entire year in a coma. And you can imagine what it did for the family, how it brought Klal Yisrael together. So his Rebbetzin told me, you know, the book just came out. It's an amazing book. You have to read it. It's not for the feeble-minded. But it's just a book of pain, of horror, and of the unbelievable chizik and courage, and how Klal Yisrael gets together to help. It's just amazing. But she said, you know, she wanted to put in some things about her husband, just to do justice to him, to explain who he was. That he's not just a number, and. It's, you know, whatever, whether it made into the book, it didn't make it into the book. So I said, you know what, tell me what you wanted to put in, and I'll read it, okay? And enough will read everything at one time. But there's some aspects of this I'd really like to read to you what she wrote. She wrote about her husband, that it should be a schus. In the realm of money and business, Chaim was a paragon of honesty. Once a locksmith came in to fix a jammed door, Chaim insisted on a Kabbalah and paying the extra 17% tax, as was his custom. The locksmith was completely taken aback. He said, Chredim don't usually do that. Chaim simply answered, this Chredi does. When certain papers at work had to be signed that would benefit Chaim's salary that were not 100%, but was an accepted practice in the office, Chaim would never sign these papers for himself, even at a loss. The idea of money that was not kosher was something that he didn't deal with very well. A famous story regarding Chaim and his money ethic came to light during the Shiva. On Monday, the 17th of November, 2014, an email was received by the accounting department from Chaim. Please reduce 200 shekels from my pay for personal use of office equipment. The pagua was the next day. So what happened? He went up to Shemayim saying, Rabbi Hashem, I believe in you. I didn't take an extra penny. It didn't belong to me. And therefore, my Olam Haba is complete, as it would be anyway. Mitzvahs were taken on with a passion. When he read in a monthly periodical he received from the Amerikas, Lehilchas Taloyot Ba'aretz, suggesting a person should be makbid to re-meister their fruits and vegetables, because mistakes can be made, Chaim went full board. And he said whenever he accepted a chumrah, he never pushed it on his family. It was only on himself. He said he would walk on the street, and he was the one to greet everyone first. And sometimes he would tell his wife, go greet that person. Go say hello. She's waiting. Shortly after the terror attack, one of my neighbors saw me waiting for my ride to the hospital. She said with great emotion, please tell your husband how much we miss his Boker Tov every morning. When tzedakah collectors would come to the door, Chaim would try to listen patiently to their story, offer what he could bring them, a drink. His tzedakah was vast. He could never say no. Chaim noticed all those people on the sides, the ones that others never took notice of. If we would go out for an evening stroll, he would know all the street kids by name. He hated smoking passionately and even managed to convince his father to quit his two-pack-a-day habit. When he had the opportunity, he would tell the teenagers, aren't you smarter than that? One boy admitted that he made an effort to cut down his intake. Chaim did it because he really cared. He didn't just meet someone on the street. He really, really cared. Cared about everyone else. He said that Wolf's colleagues, not all of them were frum for an entire year, never stopped coming to see what they can do. He said, in an interview during the Shiva, I found myself saying that Chaim was a person that whatever he did till the very end. He loved land of Yisrael, so he had to move there. He loved the Torah and therefore desired to learn from it. He loved Hashem, and therefore he had to keep every mitzvah. With these meek words, he says, you know, it's up to us, right? The biggest schus is to take something like this. There's a lot more here. But the big schus is 23 years with one chavrusa. Hardly ever missing. Hardly ever missing a thing. It says it, let me just read one more thing. In the realm of Adam Lamakan, my first thought takes me to Chaim's tefillah. At his expense, I was for a short time zeicha to witness Chaim davening when he was suffering from a dislocated disc and was homebound. If not for his pain, Chaim at home davening, he davened almost exclusively at shul, but never during shachris. Witnessing Chaim sitting with a straight back, tefillin wrapped around his head and arm, talis draped over his head, eyes glued to the siddur in deep concentration, all the while being in agonizing pain, while I slouched on the couch with my open siddur, gave me more insight into the proper way to daven than any mussar sefer can. And I think it would be a tremendous chus if people can say, well, we'll work on this a little bit more, and say, you know, if everyone picks one of these midas and tries to be mechazik, and say it should be a schus. It should be a schus for Klal Yisra. Let's end with, there was a Rav Benzion Feldman. He was the Rav of Nachlas Moshe. He was an Ish Kodesh. He had a very interesting minig. When he would get a chasen invitation, he would write his Divrei Torah or his Shiurim on the blank side of the invitation, which is good. It's like a hard card. It's blank. And he had like these cards, chasen invitations piled up all over the place. So once his family got together, and they brought him, never mind a computer, they brought him a notebook. He said, what do you think I write on the chasen invitations? He said, you think that I don't have paper? People send me invitations from all over. I can't go to all the chasenas. I want them to know, value your chasenah. I'm using it for Tvat Torah. So wouldn't that be a nice thing? Imagine you take all the chasen invitations you get and write down your Divrei Torah for the Shabbos table on it. How's that, guys? Huh? What do you say we do that? From now on, take all the chasen invitations you get, use it to write down your Divrei Torah by the Shabbos table, and say, by the way, we're mispael, this couple should have a great time. Let's be mashpia simcha. You're mashpia simcha, you're mishtata with someone simcha, and Eliyahu Navi comes into you. The more he comes into us, the more we can hasten his coming for everybody.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.